You're listening to the Bible for Normal People, the only God-ordained podcast on the internet. Serious talk about the sacred book. I'm Pete Enns.
And I'm Jared Bias.
Well, welcome, normal people. Today's episode is a conversation with just Jared and me, talking about a topic that I actually get tons and tons of questions about. And boy, did I wish I knew what I was talking about. But it's about kids and the Bible and, you know, what do you teach them and what's a good approach and, you know, where can parents sort of go maybe for a couple of resources and how can they not feel guilty all the time for doing it wrong? Not that we have, right, Jared, we don't have like the definitive answers to this. I do not have the definitive answers.
No, yeah, this is clearly an episode where we are riffing.
I want to play a press reset on my life and say, oh, I would do it this way now. But that's the question. Parents discover things about the Bible that's exciting to them, but they say, I feel like I can't like talk to my kids about this because it's like too, I want to make sure they turn out to be good Christians.
Right. Well, and it's also like I'll speak for me, grew up in a certain way that the Bible was taught to me. Mm-hmm. And as I grew, my faith has changed and it's evolved. But now I don't have an example or model really mm-hmm. for how to approach it differently for my kids.
Right.
If I wanted to do that. Right. So, you know, we mentioned, I think this came from our previous episode with Richard Rohr, where he mentioned something about how to teach these kind of concepts mm-hmm. about faith and stuff to our kids. So we thought it would be a good conversation for us to... Mm-hmm. Not have definitive answers with,
right. and we hope this isn't the last such conversation we'll have about this topic.
Yeah, I think, you're an expert out there on this,
yeah, please let us know. And
this is a cry for help, really.
Help us. Well, let's get into this, shall we?
Sounds good.
All right.
Das Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn. Und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
Hi, folks. Our topic today is teaching your kids Bible, which for Jared and me, that's an easy topic because we're so good at it.
Oh, absolutely.
My kids are just awesome. They've memorized the whole Bible.
Yeah.
They're pretty much perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know,
by age 13, that's the only way, that's how they earn privilege to get out of the house, actually.
Yeah. My kids were perfect until they turned 2 and then started falling apart. After
they had it memorized by 2. That's oh, impressive.
But all kidding aside, see, this is a question that I get a lot and Jared gets as well. Like the stuff that we talk about exploring the Bible and not taking answers at face value, but maybe digging deeper and talking to others who think differently as a way of learning and even communing with God. That's great. And what can we do with our kids, though? And how can we teach our kids Bible? And I think that's a very vital question, and one that, again, is not always talked about as much as it is sort of assumed you're going to do certain kinds of things a certain way.
Yeah, I think there's a lot, you know, one of the challenges is we go through our own journey of faith, and sometimes it's a struggle and it's a fight, and then we come out feeling refreshed and renewed and feeling pretty confident in a lot of things, and then we look back and realize we have kids mm-hmm. that... How do you parent
through that. I mean, they haven't gone through those struggles. So the way I read the Bible now is so nuanced, mm-hmm. and it's so informed by these concepts like suffering, and it's complicated. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so what do I do with
it? It's an adult book is what it is.
That's right. So, yeah. So how do we bring our kids up in such a way that they don't have to go through, for me at least, the pain of unlearning a bunch of things about how to read the Bible? Or maybe you just have to go through the pain of that. I don't know.
You may have to, and the trouble is that this is a book written by Israelites and early Christians for adults that are theologically nuanced and difficult to understand in places and can't easily be boiled down to Bible stories.
Yeah, I mean, my great example of that is, you know, reading Noah's Ark. And as a kid, like, it's the most universal story, and it's everywhere. Every doctor's office or dentist's office has little playsets of Noah's Ark.
It has animals in it.
Yeah, it's all animals. What
Probably
they
bunnies.
What they leave out, they don't include. Maybe it's sold separately, or the hundreds of people dying, like, on the outside of the Ark, right? That's a different set. And so, like, but we miss, you know, that a large part of the point of that is the death of all of these ungodly people.
Right.
Outside the boat. And so we grow up with this understanding of a biblical story that really, frankly, isn't that biblical in terms of what the point was being.
What the point is.
Yeah, what the point of the story is. So, you know, how do we, what would you say? Do we just not teach our kids the story of Noah's Ark?
Well, we had, when our kids were growing up, we had a wooden plaque in our house. It was about 3 feet wide and about a foot high. And it was this panoramic, almost cartoonish depiction of Noah's Ark. And it was sort of up in the hallway someplace. You know, it's what parents do with kids. Here's a Bible thing. It's got animals. Put it up on the wall, right? And, you know, looking at it, it has a little saying underneath it, God's promises never fail. Well, a couple things to that. That may be true, but that has nothing to do with the story. And also, some psalmists would disagree. So, you know, we're sort of setting up this little thing as a children's story that's nice, neat and packaged up. But I remember telling Sue once, I said, how about we just not have God's promises never fail, and underneath write, everybody dies.
Right, exactly.
By chapter six, God's had it already, you know, that there is no solution other than everybody has to die. We've got to start over. And what you have there is, in fact, is nuanced ancient theology about the divine realm, which isn't the last word in the Old Testament either. It keeps moving. So we're popping kids down who are very concrete thinkers into stories that are not concrete. They're actually very abstract.
Right.
So what do we do? And I mean, I say with all, you know, honesty here, it's hard to know what to do. I mean, there's no plan of attack here. But I was involved with a curriculum a few years ago, which is an excellent curriculum, which is still sort of getting completed, called Telling God's Story. And what we decided to do was to sort of try to do it a little bit differently. So rather than taking a Bible story approach where you have, you know, Jonah, you know, or Noah, or the Exodus, or maybe the conquest, because boys like swords, you know, and it gets them coming and showing up to church. Rather than doing that, sort of introduce kids not to the Bible, but introduce them to the Christian faith. Those aren't opposites, but they're not the same thing either. So in grades 1 through 4, you introduce them to who Jesus is, the way Jesus was introduced in the Gospels, which is, for example, through telling stories, parables, or, you know, having conflicts with people. And why would Jesus have conflicts with these people? And, you know, the hardest writing I've ever done in my life is explaining a Pharisee to a first grader, which took me like more editions than my dissertation, because this, and I don't mean like they're bad people that didn't like Jesus at all, but what is a Pharisee and why is this even happening in the Bible, you know?
Right.
And or just, you know, some of Jesus's teachings and birth and death and resurrection, sort of key things, so you get to know Jesus, and that's the centering, tethering point, and you work out from that into other things. And then maybe in middle school you start getting into Israel's story. But even there, you're sort of careful of what you're trying. What are you going to foreground? You don't necessarily start in Genesis,
right?
Because that's among the most abstract, difficult stuff to understand in the entire Bible. Genesis 1 to 11 is some of the most difficult stuff. You don't start there just because it's the beginning. You have to work up to understanding the theology there, and it helps understanding some other stuff first. But then you start dealing with maybe the narrative of the Old Testament, the story that it's telling from creation to exile.
Like the big themes.
The big themes and maybe the big characters and their significance. And then in high school, now you can get into difficult theological questions on a different level. Like, what's happening in the flood story, really? Did God tell the Israelites to kill everybody in Canaan and take their land? And what are different points of view? You start getting into basically more adult reading of the Bible rather than children's reading of the Bible, so that when they go to college, wherever they go, Christian or not, if they go to college, they are already well-versed in understanding the difficulties of biblical interpretation, which means they're prepared to handle the Bible well. But the center is not know your Bible verses, it's know Jesus and sort of work out from that. That's your anchor.
Yeah, that seems like kind of a paradigm shift, because at least how I was raised, you sort of get indoctrinated in the Hebrew Bible and the Old Testament,
right,
and all these stories, and then you have to fit Jesus in,
right,
which may be like chronologically correct, mm-hmm, but really difficult to do. And what I hear is, you know, maybe turn it on its head.
Right.
Start with Jesus and that story and understanding, mm-hmm, those points and themes, mm-hmm, and then you actually bring the Old Testament in through that lens.
Well, I think if you have to choose, that's the better way. Now, the difficulty there is that the New Testament assumes
that you know
a lot of knowledge.
That's right.
But that's part of what can be explained briefly to children, and which is what we did in this curriculum. We would have a lesson that sort of explains a little bit of what might be in the background here, which again is, I think this is hard to do for first and second graders, but you pick your stories, you do something that they can understand. But we also decided we probably needed to have a section before the children's lesson for the parents, because this is a paradigm shift for them as well, to think differently about the Bible, that, you know, listen, here's what's going on in the background here in the Judaism of Jesus' day, and the Old Testament background to this. This is why this parable would have significance, would have been understood in a certain way that might be different than how we're used to hearing it. That's the basis for the lesson that we're giving the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're already at a young age being taught, for example, that this isn't just stories. It's, for lack of a better word, theology. And yeah, it helps to know a little bit about what's going on there. You know, training them at some age to be readers of the Bible, which means being sensitive to things like context. Even though you would never say that to a first or second grader explicitly, you can sort of model it,
mm-hmm,
and have great activities that go along with it, whether it's coloring or this or that. You know, but you're centering on what is the center of the Christian faith, which is Jesus, not the book of Joshua, right? Even though it's there, and Christians, we have to deal with this stuff. You got to pick your battles,
right?
You know.
Well, going back though to the episode we had with Richard Rohr, where he talked a little bit about the how we read these texts, and we got into how we read to our kids some,
right.
And you know, he was talking about this idea of, at some point you let kids think concretely.
Right.
And they read Joshua and they'll read it as they would any book.
Right.
And
right.
So I think there is something, and maybe you'll push back and disagree, but I think there's something to also letting kids read stories as stories.
Right.
And, you know, we would never sort of try to theologize or, you know, have a analytical lesson about how to read,
right,
Alice in Wonderland.
Right.
We just let the story be the story, yeah, and it can mean things.
Right.
Like, as they get older, they learn.
See, I mean, I agree with you completely. Here's the problem, though. You just said, like Alice in Wonderland or like Watership Down or something. Pick a novel that,
right,
means something that you would understand as a story, and the value, the message value is in the storiness of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, parents have to be able to say to themselves, I'm actually comfortable with that, because many might say, those who are actively engaged in spiritual education in the home or in church might be motivated to say something like, but this is the Bible and God doesn't tell stories, it tells us truth.
Right.
So much of this is unfortunately wrapped up in what you think God is like.
Right.
and those perennial questions we've been coming back to, I think, in every podcast so far. What is the Bible and what do we do with it?
And you raise a different category that's often frustrating to me, this question of is it true, right, or is it a story, and how we make those, they're not compatible.
Right.
Where what we mean to say is, did it actually happen?
Right.
Which is a different thing than asking if it's true.
Yeah.
Aesop's fables are very true.
Right.
That's why they've lasted for so many years.
Right.
Because they tell us truths about life. And so, you know, so maybe it's some of what we're bringing to the text.
I think that's definitely it. You know, I mean, not to be too simplistic, but the population in America that are most highly motivated to homeschool children for religious purposes or go to churches, you know, to raise their children the right way, tend to be part of a more, I don't want to say literalistic, but more like truth is what happened. And the Bible is fundamentally a book that tells us what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And things like the four Gospels that differ significantly in places, or the two histories of Israel, it sort of throws in, like Chronicles on the one hand, and then Samuel Kings on the other hand, these stories of the monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
They throw a wrench in the works of this, the Bible only tells historical truth. The story, you see, both Chronicles and Samuel Kings are true for their audience, for what they're trying to say. They do not say the same thing about Israel's history. They're both true. Are they both historical? They both have a historical impulse, mm-hmm. but they're not giving you videotaped history. They're giving you a preacher's interpretation, so to speak, of history for the value of the people who are reading it.
Right.
And you know, if you come at the Bible that way, how you present it to children, you might relax a little bit more. You know, like, I have to make sure they're right doctrinally, or just maybe trust them to God and let them grow and be honest with their faith and be able to ask their questions. You know, when kids feel like they can't, kids question all the time. Where did Cain get his wife from? You know, mm-hmm. like, don't ask that question. You know, I had this moment with my son Eric when he was 6, and we were reading the Garden of Eden story, and he got very exasperated with me because I was reading it. He kept going, like I said, Eric, what's wrong? He goes, Dad, snakes can't talk, right? So that's an honest question that he asked, and I'm, you know, at first I was rather alarmed that he would dare. I mean, I teach Old Testament. How dare you say that? And plus, God might be listening, so you might want to keep your voice down, right?
Mm-hmm.
But instead of, you know, encouraging that, saying, yeah, they actually don't. So what does it tell you about this? You don't have to believe this as something that happened in videotaped history. But there's some, what's the value? Why is this story being told this way? Otherwise, it's no different from, you know, Saturday morning cartoons. They just don't have any... Like, why bother? I don't believe in Scooby-Doo anymore. Why should I believe in a talking serpent?
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mildwürzig, je 150 Gramm Packung nur 3,49 €. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 €. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, to that, I think that's where, in particular, my wife with our kids, she gets frustrated when our kids ask that question. Like, we want to actually instill in our kids a sense of imagination that they're already not going to the text at that age and trying to sort of pick it apart and ask these questions, because that came from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That would even be the question that you would ask, like, well, snakes don't talk. Well, if you're in a world or a universe like Middle Earth, you know, or these things where these things happen, well, sure they do. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So expanding our imagination, I think that's the balance. I think for me, the literalist interpretation, or the focus on did this actually happen, in some ways is similar to more a scientific approach, where
mm-hmm.
you're approaching it either way,
right,
to sort of dissect it,
right,
rather than having an imagination and entering into that world and just,
mm-hmm,
kind of exploring that world.
Well, I mean, it's not coincidental that the rise of the Bible has one historical meaning and European science sort of parallel. They arose at the same time after, like, the Reformation,
right,
in Europe. And it's, and we're still very much struggling with that. And it comes out with what we're expecting of our kids, even, you know, because kids do, I mean, ironically, kids are very concrete.
Right.
So you don't want to get into, like, deep theological nuances about the flood story. Maybe just don't read it right now, you know. But on the other hand, kids also, I think, have this instinctive attraction to stories and,
mm-hmm,
the value of stories that don't need to be explained.
Mm-hmm.
And to ask them, do you think this actually happened, about some story that means a lot to them, it's like, they're not even asking that question.
Right,
it's
they're
just
introducing
affecting them
that
really
category.
Right.
Right.
And not to say the Bible is just stories like Aesop's Fables, but in places it is. You know, that's just it. It's not things that you would see happening if you were there. There's no there to be at, you know. And you know, you're preparing them for a lifetime, not just of exploring their faith, but of also thinking that maybe God's actually okay with this, and I'm not the only one exploring these kinds of questions. And to sort of set that at a young age is, I think, very important, but it takes wisdom to know how to implement it in the case of your children, because children are all different.
Mm-hmm.
That's why parenting is a hard job, and there's no script that tells you what to do. You just have to sort of figure it out. But if the intention is to raise joyful worshipers of God and not ones who are always afraid of making a misstep, you know, and those are the kids who, like, get out of, you know, those are the statistics.
Mm-hmm.
When they hit 15 or 16, they're done.
Right. Yeah.
Because they see through it,
yeah,
and it's like, I don't want to live this way, and I don't see the benefit of it.
Yeah, were you able, you know, when you were at a different phase, I think, in your faith journey when your kids were young, but one of the things that's been exciting for me has been able to introduce the concept, say, of two creation stories to the kids and not have it be a problem, but actually be really excited because of what,
yeah,
it can reveal,
mm-hmm,
to us. You know,
yeah,
why was it written so differently than Samuel,
right,
King's? And there's really fascinating things,
right. Right.
In kind of the warts, the nooks,
mm-hmm,
the crannies, the differences of the text,
right,
that actually make it richer,
mm-hmm,
as an experience,
mm-hmm,
less flat.
Right.
And so being able to explain some of those things as they get older and have kind of light bulbs go off, or at,
mm-hmm,
least even just to see my excitement.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not saying it as, you know, as you said with Eric, like, shh,
yeah,
let's brush that under the rug, but to bring it out and to show a lot of animation and joy,
right,
of this text we,
right,
have and how complicated it is. And isn't that so fascinating,
yeah,
that we have this together?
Well, I mean, parallel to that, you know, a similar outcome, but a different path. You know, one of my children just wanted very little to do with anything Christian, because you sort of see through it. It's like, this doesn't explain my reality at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then later in life, being taught by people, not me, because my kids don't listen to me anyway, folks.
Yeah.
By the way, why are we even?
Exactly.
Why am I even talking about this
like
topic?
Giving your
I'm
kids
horrible.
Piano lessons, not going to happen.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Or anything. So, but one of my kids, you know, was being taught Bible by people who say, like, look at these contradictions in the gospel stories, right? Or look at the Sodom and Gomorrah story and what's happening here. Well, the men wanting to take the visitors and have sex with them is a shaming thing in ancient culture. That's how you shame people who are outsiders, who you want to put into their place. It's a way of showing domination. It's not homoerotic love. It's not homosexuality. That's not why they're destroyed, right? They're destroyed because they're actually inhospitable. That's what Ezekiel says.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's looking at that story, and she said to me, it's absolutely fascinating and energizing to see that the gospel writers had different purposes for what they're writing, and that's why they tell the story differently. Or it's fascinating to see that this story back there in the Old Testament, it has a layer of depth of meaning in that ancient culture that I don't know why didn't anybody ever tell me this before? And I'm like, I tried.
Why didn't
you read my books, kid? What's wrong with you? Yeah. You know I do write books. You know, but
you wouldn't make your kids pay for your books. If you would just
I'll sign them for
copy.
Them if they want. You know, your dad, I love you. In your room. Anyway, but it's hard to do this with your own kids. But the thing is that I wish I had been more present when they were younger. Like, not to compliment, like, you're more present with that with your kids. In part because I was going through my own turmoil theologically with work and things like that. So I wasn't really present, but I'm still glad my kids had the integrity to sort of say things like that to me. And, you know, one of my other children, when she was 10, you know, coming home from Sunday school and saying, "Daddy, why did God kill all those Egyptians?" And I just sort of looked at her and she goes, "Aren't they God's children too?" Right.
Mm.
And I'm like, good for you. You know, good for you, you know, for asking that kind of a question that I didn't plant in her head. But she's thinking, you know, because, you know, she already knows what God is like. And she's reading this text. And you know what? It takes a maturity. Look at the history of Christianity. It takes a maturity and a subtlety and a nuance to work with texts like this. And that's Judaism as well, not just Christianity. And I'm glad that she's already in a place where she's not black and white literalist about this, but asking a question about this, saying, "This rings so untrue to me. What do I do with this?"
Right,
you know?
Right.
I think, you know, that is a scary place for parents because, oh no, my kids are out of control. I don't know what they're going to believe next. Well, guess what? You know, you cannot, and when you try to control your kids, it works for 10, 12, 15 years, but as soon as they drive or as soon as they go to college, they're done.
Right.
And so what do you do? I mean, and how does spiritual education and training feed into preparing them to live as independent adults who appreciate and understand ambiguity and the search for truth and seeking after God instead of, and having it be sort of thing that immerses their lives all around rather than just this compartment where you go to church and you meet the same people and you say the same things and you have all the answers. And then the rest of the week, it's like, I just have to keep quiet. This works in that bubble, but it doesn't work anyplace else.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not a paradigm that explains a reality.
Right.
What can we do with kids? I mean, I'm asking rhetorically, but what can we do with kids to help them be explorers of their faith, which they're going to be anyway,
right?
You know, rather than simply dutiful soldiers who have all the right answers.
Yeah, and I think being able to, you know, we've talked before about how the Bible does present maybe a wider array of human experiences than we are comfortable with.
Yeah.
And allowing those things earlier on where we can basically say that the Bible itself can handle a variety of human experience.
Mm-hmm.
Doubt, grief,
right.
Pain,
mm-hmm.
questions,
right.
Answers, joy. I mean, name the emotion,
mm-hmm.
and it's in the text.
Right.
Name the question, and we'll find it.
Right.
And so being able to present the faith not as one where, you know, this is the goal that we're setting ourselves out for, and you were measuring ourselves against how far up or down the scale
right.
we are,
right.
but it's a container
mm-hmm.
that can hold no matter where you go,
right.
no matter what questions you have,
right.
there's a commitment that we have to the text, to the faith community that can hold you.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to, and then as parents, being able to model that
mm-hmm.
with, and we said this in had before, you know, where we have to be okay with our own faith journey
mm-hmm.
or else their questions will intimidate us or threaten us.
Right.
And that's not a place you want to be, in my experience as a parent,
right.
to sort of project our own fears, right, onto our kids.
Right.
So,
you know, and that fear thing brings up something, and I mention this probably every time I'm in front of a microphone, but Walter Brueggemann has this great way of thinking about the Bible, that there's a main testimony where things are working out. This is what God is like. This is what you do. If you obey, you're blessed. If you disobey, you're punished. Then there's this counter testimony. I think that probably I'll say this, I'll probably get in trouble for it. In the evangelical fundamentalist world, at least of America that I'm familiar with, we teach our kids out of the main testimony only. This is how it works. These are the rules. And, you know, I'm years ago talking to a young father at a meeting, and he was a young biblical scholar, and he was telling me with great pride, and I understand this, but with great pride, how he and his family, they're having nightly family devotions going through the book of Deuteronomy. And I felt like saying, let me know what happens when you get to chapter 20, which is go kill everybody, you know. And some things are just not meant for children, I think. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole theology around Deuteronomy where you sort of locate statements like that that children will not understand or appreciate. I think there are some things in the Bible you just shouldn't be discussing with children. Mm-hmm. And the violence of God and the sort of, you know, black and white, here's the choice. You know, the blessings and curses at right. the end of Deuteronomy are horrendous to read. There's even one line, it's like, and everything that I haven't mentioned is going to happen to you too. It's like everything, you're going to eat your own children. You're going to see your wife and children taken away by others. You know, it's like, this is what God is like. Well, you know, if you take a step back and see Deuteronomy in its context and what it's trying to do, it's somewhat of a political statement for the Israelites after, you know, the breakup of the monarchy north and south. This is sort of a southern thing, and you've got Assyrian dominance in the background, and Deuteronomy looks like the treaties of the Assyrian world. And so this is sort of a political religious statement for the Israelites that the Assyrians are not your rulers, God is your ruler. You have to trust God. And, you know, the same kinds of blessings and curses you might find in treaties of the ancient world, you sort of see in Deuteronomy. There's a historical context where this makes sense. We don't share that historical context. You're not going to teach your eight-year-old that historical context.
Well, but I think, you know, to that point, this also goes back even higher level mm-hmm. to what is the Bible? Because if the text is there to sort of teach us moral lessons,
yeah.
if that's what the Bible is, then everything you just said about the context of Deuteronomy really is irrelevant.
Right.
It's not really actually important.
Yeah.
What's important is to
Except
draw
it is.
These like really practical
right.
lessons that
right.
I can package for my eight-year-old
yeah.
so that he can live a moral life.
Right.
So, you know, even going back to that question of what is the Bible is important
mm-hmm.
before we even talk about how we talk to our kids about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And again, that's one of these subtle things that it's you can't expect every Christian who's raising their kids to have thought deep theologically about the nature of Scripture, right?
Right.
And that's why, I mean, materials might be helpful for some people, but I think more importantly is church context, where what are they actually teaching? And what is the faith that is being handed down from generation to generation? Is it a faith that is about fear? Is about, you know, God will get you, kids, if you don't do the right thing.
Right. The disciplinarian, God's
the disciplinarian,
vice principal.
Or the drunk uncle
mm-hmm.
who's going to be, you know, slam on you. I mean, just be... I mean, Deuteronomy really overdoes it. Just read chapters, what, 28, 29. It's like, into 30, it's like, okay already. I mean, I have my students read that out loud in our Torah, in our Pentateuch class. It's like, enough of this already. It's like, well, we have to talk about why this is there. At that age, they can actually do that. We can talk about those nuances of the text. But young kids, you know...
But even that with the, you know, you talked about Brueggemann's counter-testimony.
Yeah.
Like, so Deuteronomy has this very rigid kind of black and white.
Right.
If you do it well, you get these blessings.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you fail, you get these curses.
Mm-hmm.
But there are parts in the Bible where that is actually rejected.
Yeah.
And so being able, if it's like, okay, well, if you're going to teach your kids that, you might want to show this other side, this counter testimony.
But that's more difficult and nuanced. And
right.
It's easier just to have the storybook, rule book mentality for kids than the subtle theological literature mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, Job is the example of that, where Job is suffering and his friends say, what did you do to deserve it? And Job says nothing. And Job winds up being right at the end of the book. But his friends aren't bad people. They're getting this from the tradition, which says, if you're faithful, if you worship God alone and not other gods, you will be blessed. If not, you will be cursed, mm-hmm. right? And one of the curses in Deuteronomy is boils from head to toe, which is what Job has, right? So Job is experiencing covenant unfaithful curses.
Right.
But he's saying, I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So his friends are somewhat justified biblically. They're reading the main testimony.
Right.
And Job is the, you know, the counter testimony saying that's not true. And that, those are both in the Bible. Well, now you're just going to confuse kids. Mm-hmm. Well, you might be.
Right.
So maybe don't even go there right now, but mm-hmm. wait till they have problems and learn the center of the Christian faith first, which is Jesus, which is not easy either. Jesus does some difficult things, but that's okay. I mean, I think there's a different level of discomfort for young children than going right for like theodicy or something.
Right. And I don't know if it's good parenting or not, but I think sometimes, you know, kids, at least, you know, my kids, I feel like kind of crave structure, but that's often my presence mm-hmm. and, you know, my sort of mode of being.
Yeah.
I think some ambiguity or uncertainty or confusion
right.
is okay.
Right.
As long as I'm not expecting them to be clear, right. you know, to say, oh yeah, what does the Bible say about that? Well, it says this here and it says that there. But
I'm not really sure, and that's it's really okay not to be sure about
that. Yeah, that's okay. Let's keep moving.
You know, a few years, we've been going, my wife and I have been going to an Episcopal church for, I guess, about 6-7 years now. And a few years ago, Sue was helping out with the young kids in their Sunday school. And she was taking too long. I wanted her to go home. So I went in there, and I sort of tried to pull her out of there, but she wasn't done. So I sat there, and the kids aren't done yet. And I noticed two things. Number one, on the wall, a long wall, it's probably like maybe 20 feet long with the butcher block paper, spread out, there was a timeline painted on it. And all the way at the beginning on the left was not Adam and Eve. It was the Big Bang. And so they go on and like further down they have cavemen and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden later you get to like Abraham and way down the line. So I found that interesting. Like you would never see that in evangelical churches. But here, it's like it's a different mentality because the Bible doesn't perform the same kind of function. It's not expected to do the same things. Getting the Bible right and adhering to it in a literal fashion is not the goal of Christian education. It's how to think Christianly in the world that you're in. And what the kids are learning in the Sunday school classes is actually the liturgy of the church. Their center of gravity is worship, not being Bible experts.
Wahnsinn, wie schnell das Jahr wieder vorbeigezogen ist. Fast wie die Elektrofahrzeuge und Plug-in-Hybride von Opel. Und noch was kommt angebraust. Bis zu 5.000 Euro mit der geplanten gesetzlichen Förderprämie für E-Mobilität 2026. So geht klimafreundlicheres Fahren. Lass dich unverbindlich und persönlich beraten. Alle Infos auf opel.de. Die Höhe und Verfügbarkeit der staatlichen Förderungen hängen von den jeweils gültigen Richtlinien ab. Ob und wie sie die Voraussetzungen erfüllen, wird im Einzelfall geprüft.
Ah, da ist meine Prime-Bestellung.
Was? Jetzt schon?
Nur eine Sache begeistert so wie die schnelle Lieferung mit Prime. Und zwar das tolle Unterhaltungsangebot von Prime.
Was schauen wir uns an?
Fallout ist zurück mit Staffel 2. Unsere Lieblingshelden kämpfen sich durch die brutale und bizarre Einöde, um dahin zu gelangen, wo alles begann. New Vegas.
Schnelle, kostenlose Lieferung, geniale Unterhaltung und mehr gibt's bei Prime. Für nur 8,99 € pro Monat. Werde jetzt Prime-Mitglied. Die Inhalte können Werbung enthalten. Fortlaufende Mitgliedschaft. Mehr auf amazon.de/prime.
Mm-hmm. But it's always engaging the Bible in a responsible way. Now, the thing is that a lot of kids who aren't raised like that, they're raised in the more evangelical way, they actually have probably know the Bible in some respects a lot better.
Right. They know the facts.
Which can be good, but there's also, of course, a downside to that, that you know it, but it's always known within an interpretive grid of some sort, which may be actually very toxic, unhealthy, and sub-Christian, not really the gospel, but something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe. I was going to say, is there a danger to, I mean, what's the danger of having your kids understand the Bible in concrete historical ways?
Well, I think that might even be inevitable. You know, I have college students who come to college and that's where they are. And I understand it. And they'll make assumptions about history.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't challenge them because that's not the place to do that.
Right.
It's not to let's disrupt your faith.
Right.
But it's much more complicated than that, but let's assume this concreteness. I just think that's the way people are. But if you create sort of a culture in the home where questions can come up, those concrete things will give way in time to understanding the complexities. It's like, you know, when kids turn 8 or something, they realize their parents aren't Superman and Superwoman. They're just like normal flawed people, right? And it sort of works that way too with religious training. And, you know, John Levinson, one of my professors, a wonderful guy at Harvard, he talked about how kids, you know, learn about their faith in a certain way, and then they become adults, and they've grown up in every other way, except they still think in concrete terms about their faith, because that's what they're taught. You've got to, this is concrete. It's so much, there is concreteness, but there's so much more than that in these stories.
Right.
And giving the kids a space to understand that that's okay, and that God's not going to be mad at them. And look, even biblical authors disagree on this topic, you know, and the history of the church struggles with that, but not tying that to the existence or non-existence of God, let's say. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, because my goodness, the Bible's a mess. I guess God doesn't exist. Hold on. Mm-hmm. Like, parents, open your eyes. Do you see what's happened in the church, the diversity of the church throughout time, and even at one particular point in time, how we think and process very difficult information? Rather, give your kids experience of connecting with God emotionally, which is why, you know, good churches can do that. And in worship, in camaraderie with other kids, and you feel a sense of community. Those are great ways to build up a faith which isn't centered on, we've got to get this Bible right. We have to be certain that we are right. And this is the only way to understand this. And no question will be tolerated because our whole system goes down the drain.
Yeah, I mean, what I want to avoid is sort of, we've talked at length here about kind of an evangelical approach or that. But I think there's a way to hold the Bible thinking that things are historically accurate and that sort of thing without maybe the toxic side of that.
Which I think that's
no
true.
Questions
yeah.
are allowed. Right. You know, we have to have it right. We have to have a certain. I know a lot of my evangelical friends who would still adhere to that.
Right.
And it produces a lot of fruit, spiritual fruit in their life. And they, you know, so I don't know if those necessarily go hand in hand.
Yeah. No, I don't think they do. I think you're right because a lot of it is just personality types, you know, and you might be a concrete thinker without having been told by people, you must be a concrete thinker.
Exactly.
There's something wrong with you, right? So, and I think that's fine. That's why. It's sort of like, you know, a classroom that I have of 30 or 40 college kids about the Bible. They all have different personalities and they process things differently. Our kids have different personalities. They process things differently.
Right.
You know, do your best. Let them grow as best as you can nurture them. They're going to be out of your life before you know it anyway. You're not going to control everything.
Mm-hmm.
But let them go at their own pace. This is developmental, and kids develop in different paces in different ways. And for some, it's okay to, you know, be very concrete, and you don't discourage that. But others are more abstract thinkers. I do think there are people who are just innately more abstract thinkers than concrete thinkers. Both are fine.
Right.
Both are fine exactly the way they are. You don't try to turn one into the other. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But parents have to be very flexible and understanding of that fact of human development, that you can't crank out cookie-cutter Christians in your kids. You can for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It looks really good when they're 5 or 6 or 7. They're winning, you know, Bible trivia things in youth group. But the time will come when, if they have personal integrity and if they have experiences outside of the home, they're going to start questioning that upbringing, right? And you can't keep your kids 6 or 7 your whole life. It just won't work.
Right. And having that, again, in this conversation, I've gotten more and more, I think, of an understanding of how important it is for us as parents to be able to hold those differences. So, you know, no matter where we are, sort of how we interpret the Bible, being able to hold a space where someone in our family, our kids, our spouses, others, can question our understanding, have a different understanding, and us allow that.
Mm-hmm.
Let that space be what it is.
Right.
And, you know, making sure that, again, we're not putting our own baggage and our own sort of fears onto our kids.
Right.
And because I think you could easily have kids who would reject either one just right. because of that pressure.
Right.
And so making sure we're in a good place.
Yeah.
And are we confident and okay? Not certain.
Right.
We don't necessarily know, but are we in a good place? And I think that can go a long way.
Right. And being aware of yourself, that's important. I remember the realization one day when I realized I'm not going to be happy until my kids are as screwed up as I am. Because then I know what's going on. But letting them go to figure things out on their own, right? That's a scary proposition. But, you know, being aware of not imposing your fears onto your kids. I mean, that's one reason why parenting is so hard. It's knowing yourself also why you're raising your kids. Mm-hmm. And you have such a short time with them. And sometimes I think, like, a parent's duty is to prepare their kids to make it through midlife. You know, where you don't sort of create all this baggage that they're going to have to get over.
Right.
And I think my kids have had midlife crises like in their late teens and early 20s. It sort of has happened for them then. And it's sort of, it's nice to sort of see that they're asking questions at that age about themselves that I wasn't asking until my like early mid 40s.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, there's, let's see where this goes. Where's it going to go? Aren't you worried? I have no idea where it's going to go. I can't be worried. That's not my job at this point. You know? So, and that's, you just, you know, I guess you have to trust God at some point with your kids. I really think it comes down to that, that you entrust them. You do the best that you can. You're always looking into yourself to see, how am I doing? Is this a good thing? What's motivating me? Why am I so afraid right now?
Right.
And what is actually frightening me? Is it that God will zap my child, right, mm-hmm. for not getting the right answer in a theology quiz or something, for asking that question you shouldn't ask? Okay, what kind of a God do you believe in at this point, right?
Right.
But speaking from experience, rarely do we as parents stop and ask those kinds of questions. And those that do, I think, are much, much better off. So how do you teach your kids Bible? It actually starts with you and knowing yourself and who you are and what motivates you and what you're afraid of and what brings you joy. And at some point, letting go of your kids, which you have to do from the moment they're born, little by little. And the act of trusting God with your children is very difficult. But it's like, without that, then fear dominates and you do all sorts of things to screw your kids up, which they'll usually recover from.
Yeah, and very
practically. With a good medical plan, at least.
You know, one of the things you said very practically, too, that I think I'll end with is, starting with Jesus. And, you know, we've been attending a Mennonite congregation, and it's been very refreshing for us to see that approach where they right. begin with Jesus. And that's sort of the filter now through which mm-hmm. we will read the Old Testament. We read Joshua. Mm-hmm. We read it through the lens of the life of Jesus,
right.
the themes in Jesus's mm-hmm. Life in the Gospels. And that really makes a difference, I mm-hmm. think, for right. how our kids understand their faith.
That's an Anabaptist approach mm-hmm. and not a neo-Calvinist or Southern Baptist approach. I don't mean that in a maligning sort of way, but there are more biblicistic traditions mm-hmm. where all the Bible sort of has this equal ultimacy sort of thing. And there's more pressure there, but if your center of gravity is learning about who Jesus is, that's I think that corrects a lot of the problems. Thanks for listening, everyone. And just remember, Telling God's Story, a curriculum that is out there that's being built that you might find very, very helpful. And again, thank you for listening. It's a privilege. And, you know, we don't take lightly the opportunity we have to speak into some of your lives about especially a very important topic like our kids.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again, everyone. We hope you join us next time for our episode with Old Testament scholar Mark Brettler.